If you were to come to me 10 years ago, I think me and this manager would have a real problem. like a real problem, because I don't know, yeah. Maybe it's something about my past or just my personality, but I really don't do well with bullies or like traits of bullies. And to me, like if my manager, without any context about me, about the team, about my work, comes in and says you're making rebukes or excuses, my cheeks are getting hot just thinking about it.
Welcome to the Workflow Podcast, a place where we'll navigate the professional landscape together, exploring how stuff really gets done in the working world. I'm Sam.
And I'm Derek.
And we're ready to uncover the tools you need to make a lasting impact, grow as a professional, grow as a human, and to build a career that you love. So with that, let's settle into the workflow.
Sam, have you ever changed your manager or had a different manager?
Yeah, I've had a lot of different managers. I've never proactively changed my own manager, but I've had a lot of changes in management, 100%.
So we had a listener come to us with a specific situation around that. And this is a really important episode because I think we're all, no matter what level, will have to deal with this situation at one point or another in our career. And that is changing from manager to manager. And not only that, changing from an excellent or an open or manager that trusts you and you have a good relationship to one where you have to start all over and they have completely different styles than each other. So like how to navigate that situation. So we got a message from a listener, and the problem, I'm just going to read through the problem statement and then we can kind of jam on it. But just to set the tone, I'm going to read through it. So my team recently had a change in management. The difference in personality type and management style between the old manager and the new has been challenging to navigate. My previous manager was very trusting, collaborative, and open to feedback. My new manager is much more authoritative and initially had very low trust in me and in our team. What I did about it at first. Initially, I related to the new manager in the same way. I provided feedback on new ideas the manager had. I provided explanations on current processes and issues I see with them. And in the above approach, it caused some friction. The new manager had much more authoritative management style than I'm used to and the personality to match. In many cases, my feedback and explanations were interrupted, called excuses or rebukes. That's not good.
That's gnarly.
What am I doing about it now? Well, I changed the way I have conversations with the new manager, and that I no longer provide feedback unless explicitly asked for it. I've taken the quote unquote, yes, sir, no, sir approach to conversations. Ouch. This approach has worked well for me so far, and I've gained more trust with the new manager to the point where they are requesting feedback more than before. And when I say more than yes, sir, no, sir, my points are taken more seriously now. Okay. That's a positive signal. Issues I have with how this went down. While things are getting better between me and my new manager, team morale seemed to have taken a big hit with the new manager coming on. The new manager made decisions on process without buy-in or consideration for the team's ideas or feedback. So this person has some questions for us, but just before we get into those questions about some feedback, what do you think about this at a high level, Sam?
I think that it's a very common situation. More common than I think anybody would like to admit. Ethan Evans, who's a great creator on Instagram, talks a lot about career growth and management and stuff. One of the messages he constantly talks about is that most managers aren't good managers. It's just it's a practical reality that we deal with. Most managers, we talk about all of these great management principles and how to build trust in a team and openness and an environment of inclusivity and these kinds of things. They sound great when talking about them, but most people don't live by those rules and don't operate by those rules. And so it's unfortunate that this person dealt with it, but I think just acknowledging the fact that it's not a super, super unique situation. I think a lot of people deal with something very similar.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize that there's a difference between management and leadership. And they think about those two things very much tightly coupled, but they're very different mindsets. And to be a good manager, you have to have both, right? So first, I want to start by saying this person started off really well. Right. I would say that they probably took it too far in the submissive route because of like the whole yes sir, no sir approach. It's almost like, you know, just completely bending the knee. And I think that depending on how that actually was done in practice could either be building strength or it could be weakening yourself. And you want to make sure that you're not weakening yourself. But I will say is that this person put their ego aside. Right.
Mm-hmm.
This person is very used to a manager that's open and collaborative, and they probably have some banter back and forth. And this person can just throw any ideas out there and, you know, not worry about how it's received or the response that it would get. With this new manager, it seems very authoritative and a little bit combative potentially. So if the listener would have met fire with fire,
right,
only bad things could have happened.
I agree with you on putting the ego aside. I think that's actually a very important thing no matter what, whenever you get a new manager, no matter who that person is, even if they come in and they're bubbly and friendly and everything. The reality is that when you get a new manager, things are going to change. You have very little autonomy in that respect. People have different leadership styles. There's varying positive leadership styles, but everybody leads a little bit differently. And everybody's different. They have different senses of humor. They communicate differently. And so something about building working relationships, especially working relationships up, is just appreciating the fact that everybody operates differently, and you kind of need to put your ego aside so you can mold yourself to that situation, whatever it may be. And I don't know how long this person has been dealing with this new manager, but a lot of times this stuff takes time to simmer. So maybe this person coming in was actually nervous or needed to see a couple of cycles of how the team worked in order to establish the trust that he needed. Everybody operates differently, but it takes time for relationships to kind of settle into their natural state, and especially with a new manager. And as a report to a new manager, I think the default thinking is always to the negative, right? It's always like, oh my God, this person, like, they're coming in, everything's going to change. Like, he doesn't trust me. He doesn't think I'm like, I think there's a lot to be said about having patience when it comes to a change in leadership. Not saying this person didn't have it. It sounds like they were actually very thoughtful and structured about how they approached conversations with their leader. All I'm saying is sometimes these situations need some time to play out in order for you to really assess the situation.
That's a great point, because as a human, we're set to compare everything to something. It's all relative, right? So if you had a great experience with your past manager and the style of the person coming in is completely new, our first instinct is, oh, this is bad. But really, it could just be different. You just don't have the context to pull from or the same history. So that's an excellent point. So this person has some specific questions for us in terms of, you know, seeking advice and some tactics on how to improve. You have three different questions, right? One question being, hey, how do I deal with a person with a different personality style? Two, how do we keep this team a team through this transition? Because team morale seems to have been taking a hit. And then three, how do I keep this person's ego satisfied and not undermine their authority, but also get my ideas across because I feel like I have some important stuff to say? So generally, I think one of the very first things you can do is try to put yourself in their shoes. And you can look at this from two angles. The first one is, what kind of pressure or goals do you think this person is under? So Sam, you mentioned this person might be, the manager might be nervous, or they might, you know, are completely just unsure about how to handle a new report, you know. But another possibility is that this manager might have heard from other people that this team is underperforming, or yeah, the boss above them is cracking the whip and saying, I have this and this you need to do. The other person left and they just dropped it on my plate. I can't handle it anymore. You have it, right?
So understanding goals and pressures, totally agree. I would even separate them. Mm. Pressures being like, I have pressure to perform. I inherited this underperforming team, or at least somebody told me they were underperforming. Maybe I have some other kind of peer pressure at my level as a manager coming in and inheriting this team. The pressures are very ambiguous. And most managers probably won't share a lot of the pressures that they're feeling on the team. So those you're going to have to use some spidey sense around.
Yep.
Goals are on the other side of that spectrum. They're very objective, or they should be. Most companies use some form of objectives and key results, or OKRs or something. And if those aren't clear on your team, like, you should make them clear. And the manager should be clear about what those are for the team, or the team should be clear about, here's what our OKRs were that you're inheriting. And so goals should actually be very, very objective. And so understanding goals and pressures, use your intuition to understand the pressures, but have a conversation or structure a conversation around goals, because those can be very objective. And just unifying goals as a team, everything kind of cascades from there and gets a little easier as well.
That's so true. Like, goals being objective, pressures being subjective, right? Subjective to the personalities around and the external pressure. Yeah, I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, for sure.
And so if you're able to kind of turn the tables and put that empathy hat on for a second, the second thing that you can do is try to understand the personality type of the manager that's coming in. So in this particular situation, seems like they're more of a type A personality, type A versus type B, type B being more lenient, casual, chill. Type A is very anal retentive, authoritative. Maybe there's a little bit of an ego thing there. Sounds like there might be. A couple questions you can ask yourself. Does my manager prefer stories or data? Do they prefer face-to-face conversation or a well thought out email? So these sorts of questions, you know, relative to everything, you know, everything's compared to each other. Do they prefer you tell them a story in order to get your point across, or do they just want the data? You know, I work in IT. Just give me the data, dude. Like, that's most of my managers that I've had, is like, nothing that I say will stand on its own two feet if I give anecdotes. Everything needs to have some data quality behind it, right? The second thing is, you know, face-to-face conversation or a well-thought-out email. You'd be surprised how many people would prefer that you don't actually spend their time on a quick one-on-one chat. They just want you to send an email so they can get to it whenever. So there's a lot of questions that are in that arena where if you understand their personality type and their proclivity, their preference, then you're setting the environment and the context for them to be more receptive to your ideas and your suggestions.
Yeah, two simple ways to figure that out too. Ask them or ask people that used to work with them. Perfect. And the latter is actually more effective most of the time. Because most of the time what they tell you actually doesn't really work in practice. It's just conceptually how they think about it. But you really get the dirt on asking people that they used to work for. I just went through this 2 years ago. I had management change. I went from a manager who was closer to me in level, and her and I had a great working relationship, loved to joke around, went out drinking a ton, and like we were totally cool. But then I was reporting into the chief product officer of the company. First time ever reporting into an executive. And he came, I'll even say his name, Nikhil. He knows that we have this podcast and he has listened to an episode or two. And he came in and he set some expectations with me to begin with. And he was like, look, I've got resting bitch face. And I'm very candid. And I was like, okay. And he's like, no, just understand that. And because he knew most people would have a problem with it. And I totally had a problem with it. Because I don't deal well with that at all. I need like that extroversion reciprocation and stuff. But as we started working together, I struggled a lot with him in the beginning for similar reasons. He had a completely different working style. He was not task-based at all. I would write him summary emails. He wouldn't read them. I'd write docs. He wouldn't review them. And I really struggled to figure out how this dude worked so that mm-hmm. we could start to build some kind of rhythm together. And I was super frustrated and it was really stressful. And I was terrified as well because I thought that he didn't know what I did. And so I had a couple conversations with him asking him like how he wanted to work. And he's like, yeah, like I'll do better about reading the docs. Sorry about that. I'm new, et cetera. And to some degree that was definitely helpful. But he also started bringing on folks from his previous company to start different roles. And so I started chatting with those folks. And that's where the gold was. Mm. Those guys were the ones who told me, he's not task-based. Don't send him the monthly updates. Not going to read it. That's actually, I've given this framework a lot on this podcast, and it's been the most effective thing for me for communicating him ever. And it's come to him with, here's the problem. Here's what I'm doing to fix it. Here's where I need your help. And the second that I started doing that, we were golden. Mm. Every conversation was super productive. He just operated in a way where he trimmed all the fat from his day because he's just this super cerebral, very, very smart individual that was just focused on problems and solving problems. And I'd never worked like that before.
You got lucky because he brought in other people from outside the organization that he worked with. So like you could pull that context out. And the scenario where this viewer or this listener is talking about is a person that came in brand new to the organization and there's nobody around to really ask about where that dirt is or where the more unfiltered preference lies. Yeah. Do you have, like, I don't have an answer to this, but I'm just curious what you think, like how would you get to that without, you know, directly asking the person?
I would start networking. I would use LinkedIn and hit up people that he used to work with.
Really? You would go that far?
Yeah. Why not?
Yeah.
I don't know. Would you? What's the downside in that?
I don't know if I would think about it. So, you know, that's a good point. Like, how would you, I guess, navigate the, how do you find out who this person reported to or reported into?
I bet you could do some ninja LinkedIn-ing and figure
you
that
are
out.
You are a LinkedIn ninja. You've become a LinkedIn ninja.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I have a similar story where, you know, once Ultimate Software merged into Dacronos and became UKG, mm-hmm. I was very used to Javi. You know, we just stories. Like, he's very story driven. You know, we'd get to the data sometimes, but it was more like, let's try things out and just focus more on the anecdotes and just the relationship side of things. When I came over, all of a sudden Mike was there, Mike Gibo, who you had interview with us as well. And the first one-on-one
that
you had
with me. Other side of that spectrum a little bit.
It's completely different, right? The first one-on-one that you had with me was like, for better or for worse, I'm not very emotional. I'm not a cheerleader. I like data. And I gravitate towards people who get shit done. And that was it. And I was like,
dude.
Oh. But here's what's crazy is like at the beginning, that didn't click with me. He said that. And yeah. I was like, oh shit. But my actions didn't change. The very first time where I got an opportunity to potentially shine And to impress him, I reached out and I was like, hey, I'm the subject matter expert on this area. If you ever have any questions, put something on my calendar and I'll just walk you through whatever. Because it was like a big critical initiative that he had on his docket. He's like, you know what? I will take you up on that offer. Put something on my calendar. We get in. I didn't prepare shit because to me, it was just going to be like this back and forth jam session. I get in. I go, hey, so what do you want to talk about? He goes, what do you mean what I want to talk about? You're going to show me it. So in his mind, he had the assumption that I was going to have this big thing prepared. And I knew what parts of it that he needed to know. And I get in and I'm like, just willy nilly, what do you want to know? And that meeting lasted 5 minutes because he told me what his preference was. It didn't click with me to change my approach to get more detailed into, okay, what does Mike want to know? Right.
Yeah. You can't fault Mike for operating the way that he operates, and good on Mike for telling you, but that doesn't make it any easier.
No,
it's still, he's not Hav though. And I love Hav, and that was probably hard to reconcile with. And then on top of that, old habits die hard, because you probably had so much success with Hav operating in this way that you just didn't know. And there was probably some friction in that change, even though he told you to your face. Mm-hmm. That's crazy.
Yeah. If but I would have like, do it over again, I would have, knowing what I know now about him, like, again, you can't go back in time, but you want to be able to, you know, split out the personalities. We even do that with interview guests now, right? When we do it through our screenings and open kimono, right? This is just the way we operate. After having our interviews with Javi and then Mike, we came out as a result and said, we need to filter out and vet which type of personality we're having on the podcast. Because with somebody like Javi, you got to tell him to stop. With somebody with Mike, you got to have a long list of questions because he's so succinct and concise with his answers that you're going to run out of it within 20 minutes, which we did, right? We had to like improvise some points on the fly. Yeah. So it's just like that when you have a reporting, when you have a manager, you have to do the same thing.
It's a interesting theme, I think, across both of those stories, mine and yours, that there's a lot that you can do with a new manager by just looking inward, looking at all of the different variables that you can control, and then thinking about how you can get smart about which variables to tweak, whatever that is. If it's just observing how the manager operates and what they gravitate towards in a conversation, or what they get excited about, or maybe it's just asking them how they like to receive information or what their priorities are, or maybe it's doing some LinkedIn ninja action and networking and trying to figure it out that way. That's all data.
Yeah.
For you then to formulate a strategy on all the variables that you can change and tweak based on what you do every day to start to recraft that relationship.
Yeah.
And that may sound like a lot and overwhelming and everything, but that's life, yo. That's just building relationships at work. And this is just a really, really important relationship.
Let's bring it back to the listener's situation, right? So like the next thing that they could do is to read between the lines. So when I say that, like we talked about goals and pressures and personality types, how about you look across the team and watch this manager's behavior in the field and say, is there anybody this person is gravitating towards? Look for the anomaly. If this manager with me and a couple of my colleagues is very either dismissive or micromanaging, but then this one person, you see smiles, you see trust, ask yourself why. What is it about them? Do they have context already? Do they already have this person's trust? Is it some behavior that this person is exuding that the manager gravitates towards? And if the answer to the first question is, oh, this person used to work with that person, you get like more data points to say, okay, maybe I should lean more in this direction, or maybe it's, you know, maybe it's telling the bad story where, you know, I don't like what I'm seeing. But if you try to find people on the team that is like the anti-pattern to the experience that you're having, it could give you a clue into a way of shifting your behavior.
If we're still on the trust thing, it's also fair that as a new manager, you come in and you don't immediately just trust people. Trust does have to be earned. And it would actually be more of a red flag to me if this person came in and just completely trusted everyone on everything. So there's obviously a balance there, because if there's an embedded team, you guys have been there, he's brand new, there should be an element of like, he leans on you guys for stuff. You're trustworthy to a point. I think also just appreciating the fact that trust takes time to build with people and with teams. And blind trust is not useful, especially in the workplace.
I'm going to push back a little bit.
Let's go.
So this is not a leadership podcast necessarily. So like, we're not going to coach up this manager, because there's a lot of things you can coach up just from reading this. But what I will say is that leading with trust, I think, is always a good idea. So I don't know if there's a difference in your mind between blindly trusting and leading with trust, but I think always leading with trust is a good idea because of the relationship implications of the alternative, like we're seeing on this example. So like, in your mind, is there a difference between blind trust and leading with trust? And like, what's the distinction there?
Blind trust to me would be coming into an embedded team and saying, you guys got this, I'm going to go work on incremental stuff.
Oh, okay.
Would be not understanding the details sufficiently to build a point of view on it, to be able to challenge your team on ideas. You want to get there and you want to build that kind of relationship with your manager. And as a manager coming in, it would be wrong for me to default just trust everybody right away to go and do great work. Mm. I would want to understand that they had the capacity to do it. Now, it's a very nuanced situation when you're coming into an embedded team, because they know more than you do. And a good manager will appreciate that fact and start with curiosity. Come in and say, I want to get in the weeds with you guys. I want you to teach me. And maybe I want to take on a project. I'm going to spend my first 3 months learning. That's what a good manager would do, and a leader would do. However, like we said before, not everyone is a good manager or a good leader. Other managers have the style where they're going to come in hot, which just sounds like this manager did, and take more of a iron fist approach.
Yeah.
It's not a good approach. I think it's terrible.
Honestly, I think depending on where you talk to me in my career, I'm 33, almost 34 now. If you were to come to me 10 years ago, I think me and this manager would have a real problem. like a real problem, because I don't know, maybe it's something about my past or just my personality, but I really don't do well with bullies or like traits of bullies. And to me, like if my manager, without any context about me, about the team, about my work, comes in and says you're making rebukes or excuses, my cheeks are getting hot just thinking about it, right? So you got to give this person a lot of credit for the way that they just let it off and they put their ego aside. Because not every, like, I'll keep on going back to this. The number one thing you can do that's going to affect the long-term success is put your ego aside. That unlocks all of these frameworks in this advice, right? If you don't do that, you're screwed on everything else, right? Once you do that, and you try to understand their side of things, what their preferences are, who they actually gravitate towards, and you give it some time, now you can focus on what you have control over.
Totally.
And you can do your job well all along. Don't let the performance slip, because if it does, then you're just confirming what the manager might already think, and that you're an underperformer or you don't know what you're doing. Don't let them have the benefit of being right. But you do that through action, not through words. Because as soon as you say it, either way, it's a lose-lose. If you let your performance drop, they're right. If you say, no, boss, you're wrong, and I do know my stuff, they're right. You know why? Because they're going to come out of the meeting and say, see, that Derek, he can't take feedback. So you're proving that person, the manager, right either way. So 100%. You can be a leader at any level. And the first step in doing that is knowing thyself. And the only way to do that is by detaching and putting your ego aside.
No doubt. What other tactics we got for this person?
You mentioned in the show notes about ensuring that you have a one-on-one cadence and that you make them incredibly productive. I want to hear your perspective on this.
I think with managers, at minimum, every 2 weeks, one-on-one is satisfactory, but really, ideally, it's every week. For 30 minutes, you have time together to discuss major projects, major blockers, getting feedback on certain things, sharing problems, and talking about solutions. And that 30 minutes and that one-on-one cadence, especially with a new manager, in terms of developing a relationship, is gold time. And so how to structure a good one-on-one, like quick crash course. It's the report's responsibility to drive the agenda for that meeting. It is your time with the manager. And so build a one-on-one doc. Think about things that you need to talk with your manager about in between meetings. List them out. Allocate time for them. Share it ahead of time. Basic meeting stuff. Stay away from updates. Updates can be given asynchronously via email or a Slack or something like that. Focus this time on harder hitting topics, things you need feedback on, a problem that you're dealing with. Maybe you have a proposed solution and you want to get their take on it. But make it about things that are more productive discussion, less so about, I got this done, I got this done, I want to make sure you knew about it. Because that's not interesting time. Those are the big ones. Like, foundationally, just having that in place with your manager and you driving that conversation and giving it the time, again, to simmer and make those meetings successful. So in a period of weeks doing that, I guarantee foundationally you'll already see improvement on that front.
Mm-hmm. I'll give you some examples of the spectrum of things not to do that I experience on a daily basis. You have people that you have a one-on-one shared doc and they don't touch it. I don't think they've ever logged into the damn thing. And it's only the manager filling out and populating. That's bad.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that you're not doing anything. It doesn't mean that you don't have your own one-on-one, like your own task list somewhere else. But if your managers and you are spending time to be in the one-on-one and you're not sharing anything with them, then it makes the conversation all new and it's like clawing the information out when you get in there. And it's frustrating as a manager being on the other side because, man, like, I don't know where to start this conversation. And it feels forced if you have nothing to go off.
Yeah, sure.
Another example is somebody puts too much. I have that too, where they use it almost like a diary. It's like, I don't have time to read all this. But also, like, you gotta weed out what's important and be able to drill down into the things that I should know about and I can help with, right? Another type of one-on-one faux pas is last-minute cancellations. Don't freaking cancel, like, out of the blue, you know? That annoys me all the time, you know? And my team's going to be listening. I'm sorry. Like, you probably, if you're listening and you're getting triggered, you might have some self-reflection to do. But you have that golden person. I'll put a name on it. His name's Harry Pinkerton. He listens to the podcast. He's like 20. He's like 15 years old, and he's on my team, but he's like a rock star. The guy is just like, he's very succinct. He tells me exactly what I need to know and bullets. And it's like, here's what, like what you, exactly the framework that you had. Here's my problem. Here's what I'm doing about it. And here's where I need your help. And like being on the other side of that, it might not seem like a lot, but I love my one-on-ones with him. Right?
Yeah.
Parents aren't supposed to have favorites. But I hate to break it to you. They have favorites. And if you don't know who the favorite is, it ain't you. Like,
this stuff sounds a little obvious or maybe a little trite, but it's not. It's these foundational things very few people do well. Yeah. And so this is just a tactical thing to just make sure you nail the one-on-ones. Like there's no room for it to be like, oh, this could be improved, because that is something that you can control. And so that is your FaceTime. That's a big one. We talked about doing your job foundationally well. Like, that is something you can control. Asking how people like to work. Like, we covered off on that one. One other one that I thought of while we were thinking through this was, it is okay to push back on things. If somebody is coming in and shaking stuff up, it is okay to push back on things. But you need to figure out where the line is on those sorts of things.
Let's role play. You're the employee and I'm the new boss, okay? And we're coming into our one-on-one. And the first thing I say, ready? Action. All right, Sam, I know you're not used to it. You're a salary employee. You're not used to logging time, but from now on, you got to punch in and out every day. That means 8 hours a day. And if you're taking a late lunch, I need that punched in too. I need you to, and then you work late. I don't care that you got kids. You work at 8:30, you work at 9 o'clock. I need that 8 hours.
Derek, welcome to our company. But I'm sorry, this isn't how we operate here. First, I want to hear more about the problem that you're trying to solve by establishing such rigid time tracking.
Rigid? I'll show you rigid. So you're good on that until you said like you got to try to decouple the person from the suggestion.
Establishing. Establishing such rigid.
That you're establishing. I'm new to this thing, but in my previous company, this made sure that I knew exactly where all the hours go for all the employees. And it's something that I actually cleared with my boss already. You might know her.
For my own edification, why is it important to know the specific hours that folks are logging?
We don't work in the same office, Sam. I don't know what you're doing. I don't have enough context right now. Like, how can I trust if I don't know where all your hours are going in a day?
Because we've established a set of shared OKRs with the team. So we have a very clear sense of what needs to get done and on what timeline. We track against those OKRs on a weekly basis within Coda. And so you can understand how every project is tracking, if it's in progress, if it's on hold, if it's blocked. And then in our weekly one-on-ones, I'll raise to you any problems that we have. And you can drill in on any questions that you have in the async reporting.
Wow, I never thought about it like that. You know what? I like you, Sam.
Am I your new favorite?
Yeah, I think you're my new favorite. I never thought about it like that. Huh.
The point is here, like, if you have the capacity to debate on something and you feel like you have deep subject matter expertise and this is a good way of doing it and you have data on that. Mm-hmm. Then it's fair to push back. It's mm-hmm. fair to structure an argument. And as a manager, or just as a leader or a coworker, I would appreciate that. I appreciate a good debate structured well.
Yep.
If you structure a strong argument and it's met with resistance that's unfounded, like mm-hmm. I think you pulled rank at one point in that conversation. Mm-hmm. Or if they get mad, these are red flags. Now you have something to go off of. You write that down mm-hmm. and you save that. 9 times out of 10, 9.5 times out of 10, that's not going to happen. If you are principled and structured in your debates, and you have subject matter expertise in that area, 9.5 times out of 10, that's going to be a productive conversation.
Yeah. You handled that. You handled that situation very well. One thing that I would add is like something that I've tried to implore is that I tend to be a little bit more emotional sometimes. And I've needed to check that in my work. So like if I were to be approached like I was to you by a manager early in my career, I probably would have had a problem, you know? Now what I would do is if I start feeling my cheeks getting red and like I don't have the data, but I know it's wrong and I have like a principled like stance against it, what I will do is I hear you, boss. I understand completely. Well, I don't totally agree, but I'm not in a position right now to give like good solid reasons. Would it be okay if we revisited this tomorrow, if I found some time on your calendar and I come up with some reasons why or some suggested alternatives, would you be okay with that? Would you be open?
Yeah.
So that's just good. Creating that space, right? I feel myself getting triggered. You don't want to make it worse. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not sure I completely agree, but I don't have the data right now to back me up. Would it be okay if we took a beat real quick and came back tomorrow? Totally. Another thing that I think if you handled it perfectly. One thing I would add on top of the way that you came, you replied to me is restate your interpretation of what your manager said. So a lot of times people don't communicate completely effectively, right? If I said like, I need all of your hours logged, no matter what, you could say as you start your reply saying, the way I understand it is that for some reason you need all 8 hours of my day completely logged in the system. Do I have that right? You want to make sure that you get what they're saying by restating it and saying, hey, did I get that right?
Yeah, because you could be seeing red. And reciprocation in there, right? It means that I'm trying to understand their point of view.
Yeah, exactly.
Totally. Okay, I have a call in 3 minutes, so a couple of things we haven't gotten to yet are how to maintain strong team morale through the transition. What do you think there?
I want to hear your thoughts on this. Actually, you go first.
Yeah. My first thought is I see a lot of myself in this question because I have a fixer mentality where if I see something broken around, I am compelled to fix it. And if I see morale taking a hit, I am compelled to be the one to save the team.
Protect.
We just did an episode on multipliers and
the rescuer. Yeah.
Exactly. This is a dynamic where sometimes there are problems that are not your problem to solve right now. And team morale, while you can lead at any level and you can definitely positively impact it, team morale is actually your manager's problem, ultimately. So just acknowledging that this is not your problem to fix, but you care, which is great. Because you care, there are certain things that you can do. One thing that I would do is I would be a beacon of positivity. I would be optimistic, not blindly optimistic, but I would be optimistic. I would encourage my teammates who were struggling with the transition as well to do some of the things that we just discussed. Focus on what you can control. Let's just do great work and the right thing will happen in the end. Let's just do great work. While simultaneously acknowledging that this is hard, that teams go through transitions all the time. Management transitions are never easy. Totally understand that. But look, I'm focused on this problem. I'm focused on this customer thing right now. I want to get this thing done and do it great. Are you guys with me on that or not? I think being like a beacon of positivity in these times, because it's really easy to get weighed down in the mud. Oh my God, like he's going to change everything up and everything's going to suck. And then our team is going to start failing. And then we're all going to get demoted. And then we're going to get fired because nothing is working right. La la la. You can spiral. I've been there. I've done it. Everybody has done it. If you set an example with your teammates around these principles that we discussed, it brings everybody up.
Sometimes you don't need to give a solution either. sometimes being somebody that listens to your team member, maybe like turned into your friend.
Yeah.
Sitting in the mud with them is just what they need. So be careful who, you know, who you're talking to. When does it deserve an actual solution, or do they just want somebody to sit in the mud with?
Totally.
Cause it could be just a matter of listening. So I know you got to go, but I will leave us on this, is that regardless of what kind of tactic you're facing, what challenges you're facing with your manager, pick your battles, right? Choose the things that matter to you the most and give time in between both of the, all of the suggestions and ideas, because you don't want to overwhelm, or else nothing will get done. And you know, make sure you have some data to back it up. Are you performing? Right? Because if you lead with example, then everything else makes it much easier. So hope you learned something today. I appreciate the listener who came to us with this example. I hope we shine some light. And if you have anything, any scenarios in your personal or professional life that you'd like our opinion on, reach out to us. We're here to help.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. Yeah, heart goes out to this person. I know it's challenging, but it'll definitely get better. Either this manager will come around, or they'll fail miserably and you'll get a new one, or maybe you'll decide that it's time for a new team. Either way, you'll keep the ball moving forward. And again, focusing on the stuff that you are doing well, and you know, based on how they've approached the situation, they're killing it.
So, yeah, if you're feeling it, other people are too. Mm-hmm. Right? So, yeah, you be aye. Exactly. All right, later, Sam.
Yeah.
See ya. Bye.
Hey, thanks for hanging out with us at The Workflow. If you like what you just heard, could you take 1 second and give us a like, subscribe, follow, or leave a review on the platform you're listening to this podcast? It will really help us out as we're growing the pod. We'd also love to hear from you. If you have ideas for future topics you'd like us to cover, folks you'd want us to chat with, or any feedback in general, just shoot us a note at workflowshow@gmail.com. Again, that's workflowshow@gmail.com. Thanks, and we'll see you next time.